Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
First thing you got to do is you got to give Michigan all the credit in the world. Thought the environment today was tough. Obviously, defensively, they kicked our butts. Our defense has been on the field way too many reps the last couple weeks. Give Michigan credit. They're a good football team. We did not play well. We did not play well today. So we got to make some adjustments. Got to make some corrections, obviously, and we got to get ready for next week. It's very, very important how we handle this week as coaches and players to give ourselves the best opportunity to come back next week and play well. And obviously, when we threw the interception there, we felt like we needed to put Trace back in. You make the decision that you probably could have made the change a little bit earlier. The way they were pressuring us and loading the box, having all of Trace's mobility was critical. Tommy was able to do some good things when he was in there. It's hard taking Trace McSorley off the field. Did the same thing last week and made some huge plays for us. So it's difficult to take him off the field. That's probably the biggest thing is our trust and our belief in him. But obviously, after the fact, we should have made a change earlier. We played really good teams. We've played really good teams. We have got to continue improving on the offensive side of the ball. But we're playing really, really good teams in the Big Ten. I mean, I think that's the number one defense in the country in a lot of categories. And they played like it today, and we didn't. So give Michigan's defense and give Michigan's coaches and Michigan's players credit. Trace has always been very upfront and honest with us. Trace is not going to put his playing over the team. He's a very mature guy. He's never done those things. And again, I think a lot of it goes back to last week. He was able to come back last week and play at a pretty high level. Obviously, a week later, getting treatment every single day. He looked good. He felt good. But Trace would never do that. Trace is a team-first guy. He's always very honest. He's very upfront. He's very transparent. So we would never question that. When Trace tells us something, we trust it. I don't know if it necessarily was as much about Trace's knee as it was about how good they are on defense. Obviously, more mobility. Trace at 100%. Yeah, I think helps us. There's no doubt about it. But I think it's, we got to give them credit. They're the number one defense in the country for a reason. And, that was the bigger difference tonight. Obviously, Trace being 100% could have made a difference. Yeah, no doubt about it. But, I think it's got to start with giving Michigan credit. Obviously, we can't turn the ball over, you can't turn the ball over in those situations. So it felt like we had to go back with Tommy, with Trace. It wasn't a situation where the guy just made a great play. The last thing we want to do when we're in a situation we were in tonight is start turning the ball over. So that was the decision to go back. The last couple of years has been like this. They come to our place and have to play in our environment, and it's a tough environment to play in. We come in here, it's a tough environment to play in, especially, I think when you're talking about D lines. Our defensive line at home, when people have a hard time communicating, are challenging. When you come here and you got to play in this environment and they're a pressure defense, bunch of single blocks, and they're able to, gain the advantage, of communication at the line of scrimmage, makes it very, very challenging. Did I think we would handle the noise better? Yes. But again, I think it's not just one thing. It's the noise. It's their defense. I can't give them enough credit. We knew they were good on film. They got Rashawn Gary back this week as well. We knew they were really good on tape, and we knew it was going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about it. And it was magnified for all the reasons you guys have brought up. It limited at some positions from an injury standpoint, a really good plan by them. We had opportunities that we didn't hit. You can kind of spread the wealth. We got great leadership. We got a really good locker room. Obviously, everybody's hurting in there. Coaches are hurting everybody. I get it. The fans are hurting. I get it. But we got a great locker room, and our guys will handle this the right way. We got an opportunity coming up this week, and we got to make sure that there's no hangover effect from this. We got to look ourselves in the mirror. We got to make some adjustments, and we got to make some corrections, and then give ourselves the best opportunity to be successful next week.
Look. Okay. Not good. As simple as that. Let's start with a couple things. Number one, Michigan did a great job of playing its game. Normally, Jim Harbaugh teams that have come off a bye week have shown some rust, haven't been in sync. That's been the norm for Michigan coming off bye weeks. Not this time. This time they came out. Were they better? I don't know if they were better than before the bye week, but they just played their game. Shea Patterson makes a big difference in that he brings a competency to the quarterback spot they have not had since Jake Rudock. And that makes them better across the board. It also helps when your defense is only out there 22 minutes and your offense is out there 38 minutes. Michigan did not make mistakes. About the only mistakes really Michigan made during the game would be the penalties they took. That's about the only mistake that they ended up making in the game were the penalties. Other than that, and turn the ball over, they did a great job of converting third downs, especially on the 90-yard drive. They were 3 for 3 on third down in the 90-yard drive, including a big 3rd and 6 run by Shea Patterson when they were on their own 14-yard line. He was able to gain 11 yards on that play and kept the drive alive when Penn State could have picked up some field position, down only 14-0 at the time in the game. In fact, this was a 14-0 game with a couple of minutes to go in the third quarter. Conversely, Penn State made mistakes. Trace McSorley, and again, there was not one point in this game where I question any call the officials made. None. To me, the officials called a clean game all the way through. I would assume they graded out pretty well. At least in my opinion, I thought they graded out very well in the game. So when Trace McSorley got the first down, it appeared, and with the hook slide, they marked him a foot short. It was the correct spot because he went too soon. Right? All right, so there's a mental mistake there from somebody that doesn't make mental mistakes. 3rd and 7, Michigan's driving. Okay, now your defense is playing it down in distance. They can give a little bit of a cushion bump. Windsor jumps offsides. Now, how many times has Robert jumped offside this year? You can't do the ball's right in front of him. The ball's in front of him. He can't jump. Can't. That's an unforced error. Right? The exchange between Trace and Miles Sanders. Second straight week that's happened. Fumble recovered at the 48-yard line in the 7-0 game. Unforced error. In a game where you couldn't afford any. Now, the blocked field goal. Look, then it becomes a mad scramble. You're going to get blocks in the back. It's just going to happen because everybody now, they're turning backs, they're switching around. That stuff happens. It's too bad because Garrett Taylor scored on that. It really was a well-done play by Nick Scott and by Garrett Taylor. It's too bad about the block in the back. But again, I can excuse that. That's going to happen. Just in the mad scramble, the turning of backs, things like that, I got it. And then the pass play, when they drove, when they started their own 10, they drove to the Michigan 39 near the end of the first half. DeAndre Tompkins had been going outside move, outside move. He gave an inside move and then boom, cut. He gave an outside move and then cut inside. DB fell down. He's 20 yards behind and was flat out missed it. Flat out missed it. These are all of these plays are all within the confines of a 7-0 or 14-0 game at that point, where if you get a score or prevent a score, now you're still hanging around. Even though Michigan has been dominating the play, Michigan's been dictating the play, if it's now 7-7 or it's 14-7, now the dynamics at least change a little bit, where you're giving yourself a shot where maybe you make a play or you get, And then what happened was, first of all, a 90-yard drive was brilliantly executed, 3 for 3 on that drive on third down. Brilliant. Which was then followed up by the Tommy Stevens interception that Watson ran back. Now you've gone from tight game, you can still get a score to cut the lead in half, whatever. You're still in that spot. Instead, now you're faced with an avalanche. And that's where you are. You're faced with an avalanche when that happens. We haven't seen that in 2.5 years. Haven't seen it in 2.5 years. The part that is a problem, a part that is a problem for Penn State is they got to be better in third down. They're only 34% right now in third down. Now, you can be better. By the way, I think the average is they're like 3rd and 8 right now. You got to be better on first and second down to then set up more manageable 3rd and shorts instead of having an average 3rd and 8. So you got to find more efficiency on offense. Defensively, I thought for the most part they played, actually, there was that, in the start of the second half, you needed your defense to get some 3 and outs, and they got some 3 and outs to start the second half. I thought they played the run pretty well. Patterson, I think, hurt them more with his plays from quarterback really more than Higdon did. At least I thought. You know, yeah, Higdon had the 50-yard run in the first series, but I mean, that's an opening series. They've been prepping 2 weeks for that. I got it. You know, I mean, you're going to find teams normally that, you know, Penn State's pretty good on its opening series usually. A lot of teams are like that. You know, those are the ones they script out, they plan, and so forth. And Higdon broke that 50-yard run. Really well done. But for the most part, they did a decent job in the Michigan ground game, most part. Yeah, there's that play, that pass play to Evans, where, again, linebacker got caught up in the wash and didn't get out there. And you crushed on that play. Nico Collins made a really nice catch down the field. Well done. But, you know, it's now you go back to work. Now you got to, you know, you got, okay, so now becomes the part, like, what do you have to play for? You'll always hear the outside part of what do you have to play for. Okay. I mean, Sean, why do you show up at work every day?
I got nothing better to do with the house. but no, on a professional standpoint, no.
Yeah, that was the answer.
But no, on a professional career standpoint, you know, I want to make sure I'm better today compared to what I did yesterday because I know I can do better.
All right. I mean, that's I always love when you hear, oh, well, that's it. Season's over. Fire all the coaches. They have nothing to play for.
Oh, they can win out and they can still get a great post-Christmas bowl. Absolutely they can.
First of all, when they open the gate and the team runs onto the field, if you go through the attitude of, well, I got nothing to play for, guess what they do to you in the first play? They smack you right in the mouth. And guess what? You wake up and go, I better start playing. Because if I don't play, they're going to smack me in the mouth all day. So it's up to you to get out there and play, because guess what? They're going to play. So you have plenty. I mean, in that moment, as a player, I mean, the fan could be all they want. Nothing to play for. That's it. I gave up. The players can't do that. They do that. They're going to be laying all over the place. So they've got to go out and they've got to go and put everything they have into it. They know, the seniors know, they only have 2 more games in that stadium. That's it. They also know that if they were to run the table at the end and say they're fortunate enough they win the bowl game, they get the 10 wins. That's 3 straight years with 10 wins. Yeah, I've been around here in 36 years. So, and yeah, can they get to a New Year's Six game? Yeah, actually, you look around, that possibility actually is still there. In my opinion, the reason is I think they don't really have all the spots. You know, and they want draws too. But that's down the road. You got a Wisconsin team with a fabulous running game led by Jonathan Taylor. We don't know what's going on at quarterback. Alex Hornibrook, whose sister, by the way, went to school here. He's out of Malvern. He's back in concussion protocol, so we don't know about him. Alasagopolo probably is out again because of an arm injury. their nose tackle. They've had a lot of injuries on defense. Scott Nelson, one of their safeties, is questionable. So we'll see. I don't know. Injuries have hurt Wisconsin this year. They're also 6-3. This is also going to be a game potentially with limited possessions in it. Now, you never hear anybody talk about possessions in football. But in basketball, we talk about it all the time. Hey, look, there's 3 minutes to go in the game. Hey, Dick, how many possessions do you think there are left in the game? Dick may say, hey, look, there's 7 or 8. And that's like total. Well, in this game on Saturday, you're probably going to see a total of 22 to 24 possessions in the game instead of maybe 30. So you got to maximize your time with possessions in a game when you play a team that wants to get time-consuming drives, run the ball, run the clock. And it's going to be chilly on Saturday, too. But I always live. What are they? I have nothing to play for. Well, you're not playing. They are. Guess what? You want to go out like, huh, okay, I got nothing to play for. Boom! And you get up and go, I better start playing. Because they're going to go boom all day to me if I don't start playing. You know, and these guys, have, you know, it's not just playing for team. They're also playing individually as well, especially the older players. I mean, do you want to put out a tape that the pros are going to look at and say, sorry, not a max effort guy?
So we could have a complete opposite of the Indiana game from a couple of weeks ago when Indiana ran 100 plays, so Wisconsin could barely crack, what, maybe 60?
Well, it's not a question of that, Sean. It's a question of the number of possessions, not the number of plays. I mean, Michigan only ran 69 plays on Saturday. They had the ball 38 minutes. But when you're getting the longer drives, it's reducing the number of possessions in the game with longer drives, which then takes away more opportunities for you offensively to get something done. I know this is a foreign concept for people to talk about possessions in football games going in. When you face these teams, they want to limit the number of possessions in the game. They don't want to be in a 15. They don't want to be in a 30-possession game where each team gets 15. They want to make sure you get three fewer possessions because they get three fewer possessions too, because they want to control the game possession-wise in terms of the time of possession. So they want to limit how much you have. There may only be a dozen possessions for each team in this game coming up on Saturday. And it's just something to think about, which I think then brings with it more of a case of a sense of urgency in terms of how efficient you need to be on your possessions. And if you can get three and outs when they have the ball, well, okay, then now you have now changed the dynamics. Because Penn State likes to score in 4 minutes or less. They like to score in 4 minutes or more. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades, finding their customers the best insurance, whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever covers you, at the best price. And if you need them in a pinch, they are there all the way for you. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, let's get to Bucknell football. Up next will be a trip to D.C. to take on Georgetown. We're joined by the head coach, the Bison, Joe Susan. Joe, welcome. Great to have you back with us, Coach.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be back with you.
Okay, this is a tight game at halftime. What were some elements in the first half that made it a tight game, in your opinion?
Our defense did a very good job of keeping them from going over the top early. They tried, they took their shots, and then the other thing we did is we kept Bragalone in check. And we were fortunate that in some of the kicking game we got really good field position. We gave up one. The wind was unique in that game. It was between 15 and 20 mile an hour crosswind, and the way the stadium works is that sometimes it swirls. And Brian Marine, who's usually very reliable with his hands and the decisions he made, he actually had to. It's like an outfielder at Wrigley Park with the wind blowing in. He misjudged it. It bounced off him. They got a change of field. They went in and scored. We answered their score. Then actually had a PAT block, so it made it 7-6, and it changes your math. They made it 14-6. We made it 14-14. They made it 21-14. So at halftime, it's 21-14. They kick a field goal early in the third quarter, and we're driving 24-14, and we're on the plus 21, third and six. And we run a route. It's a leverage break to our inside receiver to the weak side, and makes a great route. He actually pushed off a little bit, but as long as they don't call it a push off, it's not a push off. And
right.
But was on time. He jumped, and you didn't need to jump, and it hit off his hands, and he dropped it, and we kick a field goal. That's an important part of that game because we're going to get the ball on the 11. And who knows what happens. But then they started going over the top. They hit a couple over the top that, unfortunately, their quarterback and their running back played like they've always played. And we played with a freshman quarterback. Taron Earl did a very good job. His DNA keeps him very composed. It's credit to his mom and dad. And I feel he's going to be an outstanding player here. And our freshman receivers, Brandon Sanders, Dominic Lyles, both had very good games. Brandon Sanders is a powerful receiver, and both young men are very willing to go over the middle. And I think when they get hit, it's actually them doing the hitting.
Sometimes you have one of those years, and in one of those years, Taron Earl became the 40th different player to start for you this season. What should that tell everybody?
That we have some resilience, that we've recruited the right guys. I do a games lost by injury roster, and it accumulates through the year. The number is higher than I've ever had it, and but it's the way it works. Sometimes the injury gods smile on you, and sometimes they do other things to you. It's just...
right.
I credit the guys. I credit our staff in terms of how they prepare the guys that are playing, and I credit these players for. It's still the best time of my day, and I have a calling, and sometimes that calling is challenged by the guy that makes those decisions, and I'll never lose track of what I'm supposed to be doing and how I work and. The only thing that changes for me, Steve, is that when we change the clocks, my circadian rhythm doesn't change. So
that's right.
At 4:15 instead of 5:15, but gives me another hour.
Yep. Yeah, it does. Hey, I want to ask you about a guy, Joe Lauro, senior safety for you. had 11 tackles in the game. He's given you a lot, hasn't he?
He certainly has, and he does so many things with his body, and it's amazing because of so many things that he's done to his body. And he and Brian Marine, in terms of the way they play all the time, they don't say much, but their leadership is the way I see leadership has to be. It's let your game do the talking. And unfortunately, it got a little there was a little back and forth verbally in that game, and that I don't care for that at all. My players know that, but right. when the scoreboard changed, it we bought into it, and it's not a good thing. I addressed it on the field. I addressed it immediately after the game. I addressed it when we got home, and it goes back to as an offensive lineman, there's not much to talk about. You know, people that play the game or that know the game know when you're doing it right, know when you're doing it wrong. And my team got the message. And you know, that's why you speak about Joe Lohr. That's who he is. And he is somebody that, I've said it before, he's a ballistic football player that plays with a passion. And people do not want to be hit by him.
No, and that brings me to the next part. There are, as you and I know, there are generalizations that are made about sports. You got to give the big rah-rah speech before you go out there, and that's going to fire everybody up.
Right.
And you and I both know that's a bunch of junk. Because
exactly.
the second you get smacked in the mouth, I mean, it's like Jack Ham has always told me the story about Chuck Knoll, where some player got up to give a rah-rah speech, and Chuck Knoll said, "Sit down." He said,
exactly.
If we're prepared, we'll play well. People don't want to hear that. Next part is, oh, they have nothing to play for. Well, those are people who never played sports, Joe. You've got two games left. Your guys have a lot to play for, including who they are.
Exactly. That's the thing that I tell all of them when they first get here, that the number of games you're playing as a college football player is not getting bigger. You know, obviously, if you win the league, you go on, you keep playing. But in the long run, every game you play is one step closer to when they take your cleats away. And the guys that love the game, and you know, you pointed out Joe Lohr, I point out Brian Marine, and then there's a host of others. Their passion for the way the game should be played, they respect the game, and I've gained a great deal of respect for them as men. And the thing that I feel strongly about is that regardless of what they do, I know that they're both going to be looked at by some level of professional football. They're going to be successful because they have the courage to set themselves apart by the way they act and the way they play. And they're going to be leaders. And you and I know, and I've said this before, the world needs leaders,
yep,
especially now. And after getting to see these guys grow up, and we all at times forget, we think, oh, I wish I was 18 again, knowing what I know now. All right?
Oh, yeah.
When we were 18, we didn't know, and we got to understand
right.
that.
Yeah.
It's impressive to see these guys get closer to, you know, we're all men in the making. It just, being a part of that is something that I consider a privilege and a unique responsibility as, you know, I keep doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing.
That's right.
That's coaching
now,
young men.
Now, next week I'll ask you more about the seniors. It's their week coming up.
Good.
But I want to ask you about the foundation. You've had to play, as I mentioned, 40 different starters this year. So you've had to play a lot of young players. Freshman tailback, freshman quarterback. Are you seeing a foundation form?
No question. And, you know, you got it, like you said, sometimes you go through years like this. Had we stayed completely healthy, some of these freshmen wouldn't have played. When we get Chad Freshnock back, when we get Marcus Ademola back, who I talked to today, you know, those guys have played a lot of football. You add them to this equation, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be interesting, the quarterback position, as that evolves. It's just oftentimes in college football, the future is now. But I know that this team and the way we're going to approach this, we're going to play this last two games, these last two games, as a tribute to our seniors, but also as a foundation for what we have to do next. We got a lot of work ahead of us, but we have the right people in the program, and that's what's exciting about this. Yeah. Our young guys are hungry, and we'll make sure that we keep them that way. And I think a lot of it will be related to the stage that was set by the Joe Lauros, by the Brian Marines, by the Pat Finns. Alex Peachin will return for us. You know, those guys that it's all four of those guys I mentioned aren't that rah-rah guy. All right. They're more, this is how hard I work, and this is the reward for how hard I work in my play. And you know, that's the way I played. And I don't know if I can say they or a long time ago, one of the ADs I worked with said, "You're recruiting your own image."
Yeah.
I could not handle being surrounded by 85 of me, though, to be honest with you. But those are
I'm having a tough time being surrounded by one of me.
Amen. But those are the kind of kids I want, kids that love the game, yeah. Kids that let their game do the talking, and, you know, well done's better than well said.
Every time. Thumbnail on Georgetown. What makes them tough, Joe?
Rob Scarlatta and I are close. We'll take a brief respite in that on Saturday. But he's done a great job of recruiting to his needs, and when the league changed to merit aid, Georgetown stayed financial aid. What it did to him is that he had to go national, but they gave him that opportunity, and he's done an outstanding job. Their defense has 15 interceptions, 4 fumble recoveries, so 20 or 19 turnovers. They're a 3-3 stack team. They play aggressively. They play great coverage. We've got to do a good job, and we can't turn the ball over. Offensively, they challenge you with formations. They try to get you into a mismatch in terms of personnel. So they're doing the right things for the personnel they have. I have utmost respect. He and I have become friends, but sometimes that friendship's got to take a little rest during 60 minutes, and I know he knows me, and he knows I know him, and we'll do that.
Well, there was a part earlier in this where you said, "I know I have the right people in the program." I'll just say it straight out. They have the right guy at the top of the program. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you very much.
Appreciate your friendship. I really have gotten to know Sean. And I have to say this about Kevin, that Kevin came to bar luncheon. I had a box lunch that I take back to the office with me. When I left the table to go speak, that had fries in it. When I came back, the fries were gone. So,
that means you've been accepted into his world.
Into his world. I don't know how that happened, the box was in front of me. I don't know how he swiped the fries, Joe.
He is a stealth guy, isn't he?
Yeah. So are you. I heard you are, too.
I am. I can show up in very, very I'm a shapeshifter. That's what it is. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
You got it.
Appreciate it. All right.
Stealth.
Well, I'd like to point out that Joe is also the 17th different person that has reported that their fries were missing.
Since when?
These are people that were at Maddie's today. And people asked the suit, "Did you get fries?" He goes, "Yeah, I had plenty." We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. Hey, come quick notes about coaches for a moment. Let's give Herm Edwards some credit. Big win for them over Utah. I was one of those that sat here and went, I mean, I wasn't over the top negative like other people, but I did say, I didn't see it, I didn't get it. He's doing a heck of a job. They're having a good season. They're one win away from going to a bowl game. And I have to give him credit. Give credit where credit's due. If you're wrong about something, say it. And then there is Matt Rhule. State College's own. Went to State High. Penn State did a great job at Temple. We took the Baylor job. I thought to myself, why is Matt taking that job? That job is just laced with trouble. And they're 5-4 now. They're 3-3 in the Big 12. I mean, they just beat Oklahoma State. Again, credit where credit's due. Matt's doing a heck of a job down there. That was not an easy job for anybody to take. And he's making the most of it. So let's give credit where credit's due. Saturday, it's Wisconsin at noon at Beaver Stadium. I mentioned earlier, again, you know, people don't think much about number of possessions in a college football game. I think maybe you think more so about teams that, like, you notice the Patriots last night, their first drive, they averaged 20 seconds of play last night, first drive, and they scored a touchdown. Packers took a little more time off the clock, got a field goal on their opening drive. But you get into some of these fast-paced games, you think about possessions. You rarely talk about it in football terms about teams that are limiting their possessions. Wisconsin wants to limit possessions. They want to keep the ball. They want to keep your offense on the sideline. They want to limit your opportunities to get out there and score. They also want to make sure that they do in such a way where when you get the ball, you want to go faster because you're trying to make up for something. So you've got to get this Wisconsin team into third and medium. You get them into third and medium or third and long, you got them. They'll hit a couple here and there, but they're going to miss most of them. Third and short, yeah, becomes a problem. Michigan, for example, had too many third and shorts. So I was critical of the Windsor play when he jumped. It was 3rd and 7. That was an opportunity there. Get your team off the field. Now it's 3rd and 2. It's 3rd and 2 because you handed it to them, not because of something they did. All right, next half hour, we'll get Ben Jones, statecollege.com, get his thoughts. On it, hey, Le'Veon Bell, thumbs up. You're the big winner of overplaying your hand. You know, they might transition tag him. Did you know that? Did you hear that one there, Sean?
That's something we haven't heard of.
Yep, they might transition tag him.
Why not?
Hey, his union agreed to it. You blame the Steelers all you want. Your union said yes. All right, Ben Jones next half hour on Penn State football.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.